We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
The following program has been pre-recorded. Thanks for tuning in this weekend to Let's Talk Portland, Odyssey Portland's weekly public affairs program. I'm Gary Bloxham, and this weekend, let's catch up on conservation and see what's happening with Portland Audubon. On the show this time, I would like to welcome Stuart Wells, Executive Director, and Matthew Hushbeck, Assistant Director of Development from Portland Audubon. Hey guys, welcome to Let's Talk Portland.
Good afternoon, Gary. Thank you for inviting me here. And
I guess we invited Matthew too, right? Let's talk about Portland Audubon. Tell me everything I need to know. There's a lot to know.
Everything you need to know. Well, Portland Audubon is an amazing organization that has been in Portland since 120 years.
Wow.
Actually, this is 120-year anniversary at some point during this year. So we are an organization that is deeply involved in landscape conservation, but with a focus on bird species. And the reason for that is birds are an indicator species. That means if they're healthy and migrating and the numbers are good, then it's a good indication that the environment's doing very well. However, what we've seen recently is that is an impact on bird species and on the environment and their habitats. And we're seeing some reductions in bird species. So because of that, we take an approach that's looking at educating people and helping them understand their impact on the environment. We do science as well, looking at especially community science, looking at how these birds that migrate there to the Oregon are faring, how they're doing, are their nests, you know, viable? And we also look at education. You know, it's really critical to help people understand why or something that they may be doing might be impacting how animals are able to survive.
Why are birds such an indicator?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One is that when climate change starts to happen, and it's been happening for a while, these birds travel thousands of miles from one area that's, you know, moving into winter to an area where they can fledge or raise their young. And what we see often is that the habitat when they arrive here has changed to the point where maybe the food that they might feed on and use to raise their young has gotten mature and has already fallen from the plants. So they may not have enough food to raise their young, or the habitat's just not suitable for nesting when they arrive here. It's been impacted by human development, or temperatures are too high, or things like that. So it's kind of it's a good indicator of the health of these kinds of species that use different parts of the globe for their habitats.
Are the birds going somewhere else, or are they just ceasing to exist? I hope that's not the case.
In some cases, we've seen a huge loss of bird species globally, and that is as a result of this cumulative impact. So, you know, they may not raise the same number of young each year because they don't have enough food to fledge, or they may not have adequate nesting sites. And some species are choosing not to migrate because the temperature is warm enough where they live to be able to raise young, but that's a very different environment as well. And also it impacts the environment that they may have gone to, because the presence of some of these bird species are their seed dispersers. So the berries or plants that they might eat, their droppings actually help disperse those plants. So there is an impact in the environment in each case.
We're talking today with Portland Audubon and Matthew Hushback. Let me ask you this question. Education is a large part of what you guys do. Tell me about the education that Portland Audubon provides.
Sure. So Portland Audubon has a variety of different programs from youth to adult educational programming. We have youth camps in the summer, spring, and winter at Portland Audubon. We have adult classes, both virtual and in person. And one of the things that we did learn during the pandemic was in creating more accessibility to educational programming, continuing to offer those virtual programs is a critical component of our work. We offer different birding outings and trips with our eco tour trips, both internationally and throughout the United States. And we also have a lot of programs that are looking to address the barriers that are preventing people from accessing the outdoors. So we have our Green Leaders program in partnership with the Hacienda CDC, where we hire five of people who are a part of Hacienda's community and train them to be educators. And then they go back and provide over 100 hours of youth education at Hacienda CDC. And it's a really big part of our work. We're also looking at accessibility in a variety of ways, from financial accessibility with our Bird Days of Summer program and sliding scale summer camps where people can pay what they can afford to go out and just enjoy birding and enjoy the outdoors. And we are also making sure that we think about accessibility from transportation to sites where we're doing outings for bird walks and nature outings, as well as the ability of people to experience those trips and making sure that we're communicating early and often how long people will have to be on their feet, how far they're going to be traveling on this different adventure, and how we can make sure that we are creating a broad scope of educational programming that is inclusive and welcoming to everyone so that they can all feel that connection to nature and be inspired to protect birds, wildlife, and wild places.
What's it been like to be able to get back outside with groups of people? And after, gosh, maybe even a couple of years of not being able to do that, I bet people are super excited to get out and see what's going on in the world.
Yeah, I think it's, I'm in our development team and doing a lot of the event work. And I know as we have brought people back into in-person events, there's a lot of enthusiasm for those moments and making sure that we're being very thorough in our process. But I know our education team's been really excited. And one of the coolest experiences at Portland Audubon is just seeing the enthusiasm of the campers that are up on our site, especially during the summer when it's really very full of life and a vibrant community, and just seeing how excited the kids are just to go see a bat that's hanging out at our land sanctuary. So,
yeah, that's so cool. As a kid, as an adult, it's even cool, you know?
Yeah,
going absolutely. Out and experiencing nature is one of the coolest things you can do. And we certainly have a lot of nature around here.
Yeah. Yes, indeed.
Let me introduce Stuart Wells again. You're the executive director of Portland Audubon. Now, we touched on it just a minute ago with Matthew, but being inclusive and diverse is really important to you guys. Tell me about that.
Yeah, we believe that environmental education and inclusivity is a critical component of our mission. As Matthew talked about, we offer a variety of education opportunities, a sliding scale, a lot of free programs as well. But I think the critical thing is reaching communities that the Green Leadership Program. In fact, one thing that's interesting about that, as the folks go through that program, they also get experience in being educators. And we're able to bring on a person this year from that training program, as part of our Audubon staff. So it's really one of the things we like to see as an incubator of environmental stewards, so to speak.
Where are the most popular places that you get to go explore with people?
You know, I'm new to Portland, but I'm learning to explore. First of all, the 172 acres here we have in the sanctuary is a fantastic experience for folks that just wander around and do some casual birding, see some of the old growth that is here, that's been part of Portland Audubon for its existence. And the other places that Audubon Portland does work is on the Rocky Coast. We do quite a bit of work in Malheur, in particular at the wildlife refuge as well. So there's all, you know, one of the things I found really exciting about moving to Portland was that it has all of the things that I love. You know, it has the ocean, it has the old growth forest, it has rivers, it has plenty of places to hike and camp.
How excited are you to be in the Pacific Northwest? Where did you come from? I think I read Indiana, maybe?
I was born in Indiana, but I moved here from Phoenix, Arizona, in June. So I have to say that was a good time to move from Phoenix, and it was a great time to be in Portland. So,
what's your experience been like so far with Portland Audubon?
It's very welcoming. It's really fantastic group of people that live in the Portland area, and I'm learning more and more about Oregon and its habitats as well. One thing I'm getting used to is that it's a little grayer than in Phoenix,
but yeah, a little
sometimes. But that's okay, you know, because in Phoenix we wished for gray days. We would wish for rainy days, and here it's like, oh, we get rainy days. This is nice. So it's nice to see the seasons again. It's nice to see the various habitats that the birds enjoy that live here, and being able to see the influx of bird species during our flyaway season, during the, you know, the migration season as well.
Yeah. Your offices and building are up in Forest Park, is that right?
Yes, in the Forest Park area, yes.
Okay. And people, are you open to the public again?
Yes, actually, we are open to the public, and the sanctuary, the area that people can hike on the trails, has always been open, and it's free.
Okay.
For anyone to come in. And we also encourage people to stop by our nature store and enjoy the very, very diverse amount of kind of gifts and things that you can buy. We probably have the best collection of binoculars or glass in anywhere, I think. Very, very good collection. So,
Matthew, let me ask you more about some of the programs that you guys offer at Portland Audubon.
Sure.
Tell me about them.
Sure. You know, a lot of our work is focused on conservation, as Stuart was mentioning earlier. That is a key component of everything that we're doing. And it's not just in the Portland metro region, it's statewide. One of the biggest things that we're going to be looking at and continuing to advocate for, and was a decade ago, we established strategic marine reserves that protect 9% of our oceans, Oregon ocean. And with that, we are going back, it's going back to the legislature to address the...
I think that program is going to be updated in 2023. We have to look at, you know, our advocacy program, it ensures that these important conservation of the Rocky coastline is being maintained. So that whole initiative of protecting that 9% we were talking about does come up for a legislative review in the next year. And so we want to make sure that we let people know that this is coming up, and that your people's voice makes a difference in making sure that this is continued to be conserved.
Yeah, we got to protect this area. It's so beautiful, right?
Yeah, some of the species, the marbled murrelet, I'm looking at my notes because I can't remember, but the puffin, and there's a couple other species. But one thing we're working on too, and you probably heard a little bit about this, Gary, is the offshore wind. Yeah, so it's an important component for green energy, but there's the location that these are placed in around the coast can impact habitats for some of these ocean species of birds and in some cases seals. So we're working with the organizations there to strategically look at places where they can place these, you know, these green energy wind turbines and not impact, you know, the habitat of these important species.
Yeah, very big things on a large scale, but there's some really important things you're doing on a smaller scale too. I know in my neighborhood, there are several yards, let's say backyard.
Yes, the backyard habitat.
Yeah, program. That's it. Backyard habitat in progress.
It's a fantastic program that grew out of our Wildlife Care Center observations. And what we started with, 9 years ago, with 150 backyards. And we now have about 9,000 that are participating in the backyard habitat program. So it's an incredible program. It's also a way of developing, native plants, helping people understand what happens when invasive species like, you know, blackberry and things like that, that are so fun to trim.
Oh, they're really fun. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Great. But we're really excited about that program because it's grown so well. But it also involves other communities as well, and gives an understanding of why it's important to maintain a natural habitat. And it makes a big difference, not just for bird species, but also pollinator species as well.
And it looks cool. You know, people's yards.
And it does look cool.
It looks so natural and normal. Like, wow, this is what it should look like.
This is what it should look like, yes. Yeah. And we're pleased when we see these backyard habitat certification signs in some people's yards. It's kind of nice to see it's a growing program and people are interested and involved.
If somebody does want to find out more information about that, how do they get more information and mm-hmm. make their backyard nice?
Yeah, Matthew, you want to talk about that? We can just contact, you know, the backyard habitat program, but
The Backyard Habitat Program is in partnership with the Columbia Land Trust. It actually has its own independent website called backyardhabitats.org. And there you can enroll to be a part of the program. And when you do enroll, some of our volunteers will come out and they will do a site visit and just talk to you about what native plants really make sense in your backyard and really work with you long-term on setting up a strategy to meet the certification program policies for that. And it is a multitude of things that are factored in, having a water feature such as a rain spout drain, and making sure that you're not using harmful pesticides, and really just being more holistic than just what native plants you're putting in your backyard.
Right.
And as we're talking about, Stuart did also bring up one other really important program that people should know about, which is our Wildlife Care Center. It treats over 4,000 injured and orphaned animals every year. So if you're out in nature and you do find an injured and orphaned animal, you can always call Portland Audubon and we will help inform you about whether this animal is truly in need of help and being taken to our hospital. It's been a big part of our mission since our founding back in 1902.
Wow.
And is incredibly important. And as not only re-releasing injured and orphaned animals, but also in being a tool for being an educational program for the entire community, where we receive over 10,000 calls each year.
That's good. Yeah, Gary, the really cool thing about the wildlife care program and the professional staff that we have, the caregivers, is that they are sometimes the very first contact that people have with wildlife is some kind of an injury. They've seen a bird that hit a window, or they've seen a bird that, you know, has been predated upon, or, you know, sometimes it may have been hit by their car. And when they come to the Wildlife Care Center, our folks educate them about, you know, these human wildlife conflicts, how to avoid them in the future, things that they can do, you know, whether or not these fledgling bird that you see on the ground is one that has been abandoned, or if that's just a stage of its development and maybe you should leave it in place, which is why the phone calls that we our volunteers and staff do is really informative, because it may save them time. You know, if you see an owl on the ground, it may just be a stage of its development and you shouldn't really take it But if you see a fledged, you know, bird that's not quite fledged in its nest, it may have been abandoned. And our folks are able to educate people about that and help them understand more about the wildlife that's in their backyard in some cases.
Yeah. Do you guys work with larger injured animals too? Like if someone finds a deer that's maybe been hit by a car or something?
You know, our facility does not have the capacity for those large animals. In most cases, we are working with animals that are maybe get large at some point, but they're not adults. And, you know, we might work with mammals that are young adults that have been abandoned or their parents have been predated upon. So we might help to raise them to get them to the stage where they can go back into the wild. But our facility is not set up to handle large mammals, large animals.
We're talking today with Stuart Wells and Matthew Hushbeck with Portland Audubon. And you guys have a big fundraiser coming up pretty soon. It's called the Wild Arts Festival. Now, which one of you wants to talk about the Wild Arts Festival? Because it's a cool event.
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about it.
Okay.
The Wild Arts Festival is really the connection of nature and art and how those two things intersect. It's a big festival over 2 days held on this year on December 10th and 11th at the Portland State Peter Stott's Viking Pavilion. And what happens is we bring in over 60 artists who range in different art styles, from drawing and painting to woodworking and metalworking, as well as jewelers and ceramics and different fabric work in the arts field. And so it's really a great chance to see a variety of different art, and you can go see it in advance. The catalog or the different artists that will be involved at our website, wildartsfestival.org. It's also a place where we have 23 authors who are going to be nature authors who are going to be signing their books, and you'll be able to meet them between 12 and 4 on both Saturday and Sunday. And then we'll have a variety of silent auction items donated by the community and by some of the local and regional artists that are going directly to support Portland Audubon's work.
That's great. And it's, again, December, what are the dates again?
It's December 10th and 11th.
Okay. And it's quite a process that you do, that you go through to choose the artists. Tell me about that jury process.
Sure. So we start early in the year sending out an email to everyone who's asked to be included on our mailing list for the juror process. And we have 6 to 8 jurors every year. And as we are looking at our organization holistically, we do make sure that we have a diverse pool of jurors who are deciding on which artists we're going to invite in. We look at the artwork based on categories to make sure that we have a nice balance of and variety of art at the festival. And they grade 5 different pieces that the artists submit on a scale of 1 to 5. And then we also look at the affordability of the art. So each artist is asked to give us a variety of percentages for the prices of their piece, because we do want to make sure that it's a great place for everyone to come and get holiday gifts this year.
Yeah, the timing couldn't be better, right?
Yeah.
We're smack dab in the middle of the holiday season already. Where can people get tickets?
Sure. They can get tickets at our website, wildartsfestival.org, or they can also purchase tickets on December 10th and 11th at Portland State at the Peter Stott's Viking Pavilion.
So you can buy them at the door.
Yes.
Oh, very nice. Okay. Stuart, let me ask you, what are some misconceptions maybe about Portland Audubon?
Some of the misconceptions? Well, I wouldn't call them misconceptions. There's just that our history is so deep in Oregon and the work that we've done here, that as far as some of the things that Matthew mentioned about protection of the LA forest and our conservation initiatives and advocacy. But the thing that's really, to me, I found fascinating about Portland Audubon is the work that was done so many years ago that has put us in a position to address these emerging issues of climate change and to be the stewards of, you know, green infrastructure. And some of the programs that have come directly out of our Wildlife Care Center are the CATIO, you know, the Cat Safe at Home and the Bird Safe Windows, those are the kind of things that we were able to become part of the infusion of this, of Oregon. In fact, the catio tour this year was one of the big event. You know, people could go around and see these catios that people would build. Yeah. But that came from observations of how many birds were being predated upon by feral cats, you know, and just getting that initiative. So I wouldn't say it's a misconception. I think it's just that we can talk more about the successes of Portland Audubon and its rich history in Oregon. And had that work not been initiated years ago, Portland Audubon wouldn't be positioned as they are now to be a steward of where we need to, what we need to address as far as climate change and protecting the habitats and ecosystems here in Portland. Hey, in Oregon.
You guys are doing such great work. Keep it up. Thank you.
Thank you.
We've been talking today with Stuart Wells, Executive Director, and Matthew Hushbeck, Assistant Director of Development with Portland Audubon. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary.
If you'd like to hear this interview again, just search for Let's Talk Portland on the Odyssey app. Let's Talk Portland is an Odyssey Portland public affairs program.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.